All right, today we're going to look on chronologically. Jesus has been baptized, the wilderness. Now we're going to the wedding feast at Cana. I used to read this and think, well, that's interesting, and move on to the next story. So let's look at this kind of in depth and see if we can get something meaningful out of it. And who has a nice reading version that they can... It's John 2. Start with verse 1 and somebody read the whole story and then hold on to it and we'll go through it. I think go through verse 11. Have the one?
Clear words.
Clear words, fine.
On the third day, Jesus went to a wedding in Cana of Galilee, in which his mother Mary had a part. That's why Jesus and the five men who were now his disciples were invited. While he was at the wedding, the family ran out of fresh wine. His mother Mary came to him and said, "Jesus, they're all out of drink. Can you do something to help?" Jesus answered, "Mother, I love you, but why are you asking me to help them? I can't work a miracle unless my father tells me it is time to do it." Mary understood the hesitation, but turned to the waiters and said, "Whatever my son tells you to do, do it." There were 6 large jars nearby, each holding about 30 gallons of pure water. Jesus knew that the lack of drink would soon embarrass the bride and groom. So he turned to the waiters and said, "Fill those water jars to the rim." And they did it, and they did. And then he said, "Take a cup of this to the master of the ceremonies and set it down in front of him." When they poured up what they thought was water, it looked like wine. When the master of the ceremonies tasted it, he was so delighted that he didn't even ask where it came from, though the servants knew. But he immediately went over to see the bridegroom and said, "Everyone knows that at a wedding you serve the best drink first, and when the people are happy and enjoying themselves, then you start serving the less expensive drink. But just taste this. It's the best unfermented wine I've ever tasted, and it's wonderful. You kept the best till last." This was the beginning of Jesus' life of miracles, which started in Cana of Galilee.
Okay.
What those 5 disciples saw convinced them that Jesus was the Messiah, and they put their faith in him.
Okay, he certainly takes lots of liberty, but that's fine. It's a good paraphrasing. Certainly unbiased paraphrasing. That's what I appreciate. But that's good. All right, let's start at the very beginning. This is, of course, Jesus goes to Cana. Cana is within sight of Nazareth. So if you sat on the outskirts of Nazareth, you can see where Cana was. That's how close it was. We think the wedding was on a Wednesday because if you were a virgin and had a wedding, in the Jewish custom, the wedding was always on Wednesday. So here we are in the middle of the week. Mary's there. She must have had some type of duties to do at the wedding. And where's Joseph? Yeah, we assume that Joseph is died. In fact, we assume that somewhere in the early life of Christ, Joseph died. And that's why he's not there. He's gone. And so you must understand the thinking of the Jewish people to put this miracle into perspective. First of all, when the Jewish girl and boy got married, the wedding usually was on Wednesday, but the festivities would last 2 or 3 days. They definitely wanted it over by the Sabbath. And then there was no honeymoon as such. So what would happen? The bride and groom would stay in the folks' home for about a week. And then the people would still come and bring gifts to them. And it was kind of like king and queen for a week. And then after that week was over, then they would go to their new place that they would live in. So this was obviously a very important time for the bride and the bridegroom. So we have Mary working here. Some duties. The bride and bridegroom, everybody's happy. And of course, the custom was absolutely hospitality was everything. We assume that Mary had invited Jesus. He had five of his disciples. And then they run out of wine, which is an absolute no-no. I mean, this is total embarrassment. And then I appreciate the story. It's a very easy one. But who has different version? Who has, I don't want yours either.
I have the American Standard.
Let's use American Standard to go through verse by verse as we go through the story. All right, so start from the beginning. We'll pick up.
On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. And both Jesus and his disciples were invited to the wedding. When the wine ran out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, what does that have to do with us? My hour has not yet come."
Okay, let's stop there. Okay? So here they're out of wine, absolutely total embarrassment, and Mary goes to Jesus and says what?
"They have no wine."
They have no wine. Now, why did she do this?
Maybe she was in charge of ordering enough.
We kind of assume that that's correct.
Yeah.
Okay? So why would she go to Jesus and say, "We're out of wine"?
Save me. Help me out.
Who's the problem solver here?
Well, if Joseph was dead, would he be the head of the household? Because he worked as a carpenter. So did he have some money that maybe could have gone out and bought some?
Okay.
Some report he had older brothers.
Pardon?
There's some report there's older stepbrothers.
Right.
Yeah.
There were others.
There were older stepbrothers, yeah. Well, nope. That's...
I think she recognized that she recognized and hoped that he was in fact the Messiah.
Okay.
And of course, this is after he returned from being separated from her for a while in that wilderness.
They're separated for about 2 months.
And I think
40 days in the wilderness, baptism.
I'm just suspecting that probably she sees some change that's taken place in his life during that interim.
Okay.
And with the disciples there.
Okay.
And she said,
"What do you think her motivation was?"
Solve the problem.
To show people,
hey, look,
my son did.
Yeah. Y'all mothers?
To reveal her son.
Now, I know you have a hard time, Eloise, but most mothers are very proud of their sons.
Yes.
And they like to show their sons off. Is that correct?
Yes.
See? This is my son, the doctor. This is my son, the genius, this, you know. Now, we have an insight to Mary's reasoning. And Mary's reasoning was, she thought that she would help Jesus get on the road to showing that he was the Messiah. Now remember, she had heard the reports of John the Baptist. What voice came out of heaven? "This is my beloved son." She knew those reports. And so part of her was motivated to help Jesus get on the road to show that he was the Messiah. And she also saw the way the disciples were taken with him. Now remember, here's Jesus. He'd just come from the desert, so he probably wasn't the best dressed person at the wedding. But here were these five disciples, and of course they were awed by him. Wouldn't you be awed if you just found that you were running with the Messiah? I mean, the one that had been dreamed, you know. And so here she saw that, and she saw a circumstance that says, now we can get the show on the road. How did Jesus handle this?
Jesus said to her, "Woman, what does that have to do with us?"
Okay, let's stop there for a second. Woman, now, How would you take that statement?
It's not mother.
Huh?
Well, it's not mom.
It's not mom.
But he was irritated.
My note here, it says, woman was a term of respectful address.
Okay. How do we know that? Well, somebody turn to John 19:26.
Jesus therefore saw his mother and the disciples whom he loved standing nearby. He said to his mother, "Woman, behold your son."
Okay. Now, same word in the Greek, by the way. Now, do you see a little different connotation between John 2 and John 19? Same word, same Greek word, same meaning. See, the way that most of the versions have it, it would seem very harsh. Woman, what's that got to do with us? But that's not what it said. It was a total word of respect. And it was exactly the same word, same term that Jesus used when he hung on the cross when he said woman. So it was very, very respectful. What some of the other versions have?
Mine says dear woman.
Dear woman. That's the one that's translated a lot. What other versions? The Good News said what? I mean, the clear?
It said mother.
Mother, okay. So he's moved it in to the same meaning. Anybody else have anything else? Dear woman, woman?
Mine says, "O woman, what have you to do with me?"
Okay. That's fairly close too. Okay. Now, why does Jesus mean when he says, what does yours say that he says? Well, he says, dear woman.
Why do you involve me?
Yeah, why do you involve me? That's what version you have?
New International.
That's It's not direct from the Greek, but it's certainly a good version of it. Yeah. Why did he say, why are you involving me in this? What's his point he's trying to make there?
Probably telling her it's not about what she thinks his mission is. It's more what his mission with God.
Yeah. Mom, why are you pushing me? You know. Why are you pushing me? I remember one time Sue and I went to Harlingen, and bless their hearts, very nice people. Really liked the church. It was nice. But in the Sabbath school class, the teacher did a very nice job, but I mean, it was just kind of different. And so Sue asked me when we got out, she says, "Well, I'm surprised that you didn't speak up several times." And I said, "Didn't intend to." And she said, "Why not?" Because I said, "These people don't know me. I don't know them. I have no foundation. So any statements that I would have made without a foundation would have been, you know, somewhat meaningless." So I think that, you know, this is what Jesus is saying to Mary. Why are you pushing me? It's not your job. And he's also separating himself, I think, a little bit with the term dear woman, very kindly, the maternal instincts of a mother who wants to push her child to do the things and saying, "I'm my own person." Now, why did he say, "My hour has not come"?
Isn't that term, "my hour," doesn't that mean to the cross?
Yeah, we'll see, especially through John's writings, but we'll see it in Luke and Mark, where Jesus says this quite a few times during his ministry, "My hour has not yet come." Jesus recognized, being the Messiah, that his hour was when he would go to the cross. And so he kept that in perspective all the time in his 3.5 years, that there was only a time his hour would come, and that was be through the cross and the experience that it went. What should we learn personally from this?
Also, I don't think, this is the only one I think of, that he wasn't alleviating somebody's suffering or or doing something that was obviously this person needed to, you know, temporarily to escape from. And this was more of a social blunder, I mean, social thing.
Kind of different. Yeah. We don't find this one.
Do you think he was building up his determination for what was ahead?
That he was?
Yes.
In what way?
Well, you know, when he did get to the garden at the very end, he said, please take it away from me if it's possible. And so maybe this was his way of reminding what was coming, that he had to be strong.
Okay.
And rely on his father.
Okay. What other reasons do you see? Well, how would this fit us personally? What would we get from just that understanding and that dialogue between Mary and Jesus?
Well, I guess what the R says is, how does that concern you and me? Well, it didn't concern him. He was a five guests, not his job, he was the one. And in a sense, it's not like how those things concern us. Even though it doesn't concern us, we can still reach out and help.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with me, nothing to do with us.
How do you see Jesus seeing his life at this period, which is just beginning his ministry? How do you see him seeing his life and what his purpose was?
To fulfill his God's calling and to fulfill his mission.
Okay. I mean, go ahead, elaborate.
Well, I think it was a recognition that he was coming to understand what that purpose was, and that was his ultimate desire, ultimate, you know, motivation in life, to fulfill that purpose that he was.
Okay. And what should be our desire and motivation?
The same.
Pardon?
It should be the same. This happens right after he called the disciples.
Mm-hmm. He has five of them.
Yes. And they were saying, they were asking where he was staying and perhaps what he was doing. And he said, follow me and you will see.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where they went, and this is what they saw.
Okay, that's right. Okay. Our perspective has to be on the big picture in life. Everything that we do should be relying upon God and what He wants us to do. I think of Sandra's situation. I think, to me, I don't know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, I think that's God's leading that just come out of the blue. And we have to rely upon God. And this is what Jesus is saying. My hour's not come. God has not moved me to set up and be a Messiah today. It's not in the plan. And Mom, love you, but you're not going to push me forward. Because remember, that was part of her motivation, was to say, want everybody to hear to see what my son is. He is the Messiah. So let's get the show on the road.
So could it be that her picture of the Messiah was like the popular picture of the Messiah?
Certainly.
He was going to be a ruler, a dictator, and get rid of the Romans.
She is brokenhearted at the cross, beyond the fact that it was her son. Her dreams were dashed. It says something about God. God is not an answer person. He gives information, gave Mary information, John information, Jesus information, all through. You go back to the Bible and you study it, and that's how Jesus found out that He was the Messiah. I mean, I cannot overemphasize the fact nobody came, tapped him on the shoulder and said, you are the one. Mary told him about what had happened. Joseph had told him what had happened. But he realized that he was the Messiah by going back through the Old Testament and putting the things together. And that's how he realized it. So here we have at the wedding feast. Any comments?
Well, I'm sitting here thinking how gracious God is that Here's Mary. She has processed this for and watched things for 30 years. And she knows, yes, she knows the prophecies, but sometimes she hasn't put it all together. But, you know, she's just very human.
Absolutely.
She believed what the current belief was.
Absolutely.
It was going to be something really great for their family.
The goodness of God is we don't have to have it all put together. He leads us and leads us and leads us. And what we think is absolute fact last week could be totally different this next week, because that's what the inside of studying does. Until we get into in depth, I just, like I said, I started out by saying I thought this is a nice little story. See, but there's a lot more to this as we study, so that's the way we have to do. Continue to study, and then get more and more out of it.
You know, that question you asked about, well, that should be our focus. That always is a stimulating question, because, you know, I deal with different people sometimes, and they come in and tell me what they think God's will for them is. And it's just a fascinating thing. Sometimes that's one of the greatest defenses there is against really reasonability. But at the same time, there's that conviction they have. I have it at times in my life, and I wonder, okay, what do I know? And I don't really think there is I think it's an internal experience of understanding that you just make those judgments. And like you said, I think it changes as we develop ourselves too.
I mean,
think that's the gift of the Holy Spirit, and that we do seek it,
yes,
we can find.
Yes. Yeah, we're told the more that we understand about God, the more that we will love Him. And we're also told that this is going to be for eternity. So where do we think that we've got everything figured out? I mean, that's when you know, you're in education. And, you know, when you think the student thinks he knows it all, the learning stops. And so that's why we constantly have to study. All right, let's pick up.
His mother said to the servants, "Whatever he says to you, do it."
Okay. Is she deterred?
No.
Nope.
No.
See?
But it shows her faith in him. I mean, she didn't
yes.
do anything.
Yes, I think she caught the picture, but she had no doubt that her son would help her out of this mess. Now, where do you think that came from?
She knew him. He was in the home for 30 years.
Yes. You remember Joseph had died? She knew her son.
He loved her.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Remember, to the family, we don't know if Mary was in charge of it or not, of the wine, but to the family, this was an absolute disgrace. This is like running out of veggie burger at a potluck. Absolutely disgrace.
Well, I have the impression that Mary knew that they were out of wine, but I'm not aware that others knew.
Well, that's why we kind of assume she might have been in charge. But at least,
yeah, it wouldn't be a disgrace, that's true.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, because remember, the festival's going on for 2 or 3 days.
The person that the servant took the wine to said, well, this is better than what she had at first.
Yep.
So he maybe realized that they were out.
Well, we'll come to that in a second. Because that's a good point. Okay. Next verse.
Now, there were 6 stone water pots set there for the Jewish custom of purification.
Okay, let's stop there. Okay, so now we got 6 big pots that hold between 20 and 30 gallons of water for purification. Now remember, John is writing this from a Jewish viewpoint to the Greeks. So that's why he throws in the word purification. Now, does anybody know why water was a purifier? That's right. They washed their feet when they came in, and they washed their hands. And every time you had a different course, the Jews would go and rewash their hands in between each course. So if you had five courses, you washed your hands when you began, and between each course you go back and rewash your hands. So water was very important in that aspect, so that's why they had six jars with water over here, and they used also the water to make the wine. And so now, what happens with the six jars?
Before they ate, they probably ate with their hands.
Yes, kind of like I remember Sue took me out to a fancy restaurant one time, they served ice cream in between each course. Oh, no, that was Brahms. What was it? Somewhere, and they give you a little palate deal, so your palate, you know. No wonder I gained weight.
Is that statement there for the Jewish custom of purification, is that in all translations? Is it?
It's in this one.
Mine says ceremonial washing.
Yeah, same difference.
They have to do ceremonial washing.
Yeah.
The only people left to do that.
I've read this several times. That never stood.
Yeah,
out to me.
That's why John threw it in, because the Jew would understand it immediately. We had the water pots over here, six water pots. But see, if you were a Greek, what would that mean? So that's why John puts that phrase in there.
Still
so the Greeks. Okay, keep going.
Jesus said to them, "Fill the water pots with water." So they filled them up to the brim, and he said to them, "Draw some out now and take it to the head waiter." So they took it to him, and when the head waiter tasted the water, which had become wine, and did not know where it had came from, but the servants who had drawn the water knew, and the head waiter called the bridegroom and said to him, "Every man serves the good wine first, and when the people have drunk freely, then he serves the poorer wine, but you have kept the good wine until now."
Okay, so why would the head waiter, master of ceremonies, there's Greek words, probably head waiter is more of a correct verbiage. He's shocked it tastes good. Why? Pardon?
It was at the last.
Yeah. Yeah, you served your best at the very beginning, and then as people got full or drank, then you started going downhill because the people wouldn't know the difference.
Because your tongue would be numb.
You have all that rich food. Now, do you think that this is fermented or unfermented wine?
I don't think we know.
Yes.
Other than what Ellen White has told us, we don't know.
Okay.
There's no way of telling.
Okay.
And according to this, at the end, they wouldn't care how good it was. I mean, you know, the more they drank, the less it.
Yeah. Well, this is a great, great debate. So, context would lend that this was wine. Context. Because why else would you say you serve the first and then after you've drank? Now, I suppose the palate.
Would be happy and enjoying themselves.
Yeah. So, however, Ellen White's very specific to say that this was pure
fresh
juice from the grape. I mean, leaves no doubt.
It wasn't uncommon for certain types of Jews not to drink fermented wine. And would God drink something? Would Christ have drunk something that affected his mind negatively?
I wouldn't think so. But I'm just saying, if you look at context, the context certainly puts it in there.
But he did everything to keep the wiles of the devil.
Now, one of the things we also must understand, to the Jew, being drunk was an absolute no-no, and a no-no.
Right. That's right.
See? So you have a... you're just walking a fine line. Ellen White's very specific. on it, context would maybe tend to lead to others. So I would assume in this particular case it's unfermented wine.
Because one drink causes you to lose your sharpness. It's been shown race car drivers with only one drink will make errors.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't believe that Christ would allow his mind to have something.
It didn't say Christ drank it.
What?
It didn't say he drank it.
No,
I did a real in-depth study on this. I really did. I took Strong's Greek and Hebrew, and I took everything I could find. I had a list. How long was it? It was unbelievable. Of this, there is no way in the world you can determine whether this is.
No, I'm saying, yeah. I mean, context would lead to that it was, but this very specific. So. All right, keep read on. Oh, let's go to what James said. Yeah, it's very important that you gave the very best at the beginning. And so that's why the wine steward or the head waiter, master of ceremonies, whatever you want to call him. I mean, he's shocked because, man, he says, this is good stuff. Well, how come we didn't serve it first? Of course, the bridegroom, he doesn't know what's going on anyway. He just got hitched. Okay. All right, read on.
This beginning of his signs, Jesus did in Cana of Galilee and manifested his glory, and his disciples believed in him.
Okay. Now, let's look at some things that normally. What was Jesus doing at this wedding to begin with?
Maybe Kenneth's mother
were invited.
Invited?
Okay. I mean, if you break it down and think of it more, was his mother manipulating, saying, hey, come, I'm running this thing. Oh, I ran out of wine, so let's prove that you can do this. Was he manipulating Jesus?
That's certainly a grassy knoll theory. We'll take grassy knoll theories. What was he doing at this? You know, the kids, I don't know if the kids still do, but it was popular that they'd wear what, a yellow bracelet or something that, you know, have what would Jesus do, WWJD, or you see. Okay. Is that the way that we're supposed to live our life? He says, well, I wonder what Jesus would do. I mean, do you picture Jesus at a wedding?
No.
Do you picture Jesus laughing?
No, but he did.
Well, he must have.
It was a festive occasion. I think
very festive.
I get the impression this is a family affair. That these people were somehow related to him.
Well, could have been. There are some commentary that think that there was a relation. See? But do you picture Jesus being at the wedding, laughing, being part out? Do you have him sitting over in a corner with his five disciples saying, what are we doing here?
That would be the conservative viewpoint.
Absolutely would be a very conservative. I mean, you know, do you picture Jesus playing basketball? If they play basketball down there. I mean, if Jesus was here, do you picture him? You picture Roger going up for a layup and Jesus fouling him? I mean, that's a real picture.
Well, I mean, he stood by the seashore and built a fire and made breakfast for his disciples. And, he was very social.
Yeah, he visited in Mary and Martha's home. And, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously there was a social gathering. I mean, he was teaching and talking, but they were also fixing food and getting ready to eat, you know. It was
camaraderie there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's interesting he picked a marriage to have his first miracle because he kind of honored the marriage by being there.
Okay.
To look back at it.
Okay.
You know, some of the elements here tell a story. When you say a marriage, a wedding feast, and the water for purification and the wine all play a part. All play a part at the cross.
Could be. What does it do with your picture of Jesus at a wedding, laughing, enjoying? Or do you see him at the wedding as a stick in the mud?
He's been in the wilderness for 40 days.
Pardon?
He's been in the wilderness for 40 days, and he's come to the wedding, I'm sure. And, you know, it says because his mom was there, he came, but I'm sure he knew some of the people there. Hey, how's it going? You know?
Yeah.
You know, remember when we used to do this, when we caught fish down? You know, I'm sure he was talking like anyone else. It was a wedding. Mm-hmm. You know, and you go to a wedding nowadays, you don't just sit there, you end up clicking up with the people that you know. Hey, I ain't seen you in a while, you know.
Mm-hmm. My daddy used to pride himself on a statement that he read. I think it's in the back of HMS Richard Bible Helps, that there is no record of Jesus ever smiling. There's a statement that says that. And to my daddy, bless his heart, very conservative, very legalistic, as you want to use the word. See, to him, that was kind of law. You know, that Jesus never smiled.
Well, that's that kind of separating ourselves from this world, so we're keeping ourselves away from something.
See? So it's interesting that the very first miracle Christ performed is a very social place. I mean, you know, our picture of Jesus, and it's hard to, you know, when I said, can you picture Jesus playing basketball, I'm not kidding. I mean, to me, that'd be a little hard to, yeah, I can't imagine me and Roger and Randy and Rick and Jesus going to the Cowboy game. That's probably why they never asked me to go with them. See, that, you know, I mean, I just have a hard time doing that. But yet, he was human. He had human needs. And he was, at least social at this wedding, I believe. Believe with all my heart. So sometimes we have to look at Jesus as a person. And then I stop and think, well, what's heaven going to be like with him?
Perhaps we've got an invitation to the wedding, don't we?
See? Oh, absolutely. But what's going to be eternity with him?
Yeah, that's always interesting.
You know, I mean, are we going to go play basketball in heaven if we have basketball up there? Or, I mean, what are we going to do?
Well, it's interesting that the first thing we'll do will be have a marriage feast.
Perform this miracle. Really, it's the lowest people seem that observed it. Like the servants are the ones who saw the miracle.
That's the second point. Very good. So we're going to move to that. First point that's absolutely interesting to me about this was that it was Jesus in a social setting. And the second one, of all the places to kind of publicly do something, it's most likely at a very humble home, humble people. And as far as we know, the bridegroom and all them people never even knew what was going on until afterwards. Then it was talked about. But at the first, he did it in a very humble place. What a way to announce his ministry. At a wedding, humble home, nobody really knows until he's already left. Ellen White tells us that as soon as the wedding was over, this went all through the wedding, and then they went to look for him to say, wow, and he's not there. See? But Jesus meets people where they're at.
Yeah, and like we talked about, it was not to perform some great healing of somebody who was blind or been sick for years or whatever. It was almost just so someone wouldn't be embarrassed, which you think is it's really not that big a deal. Like, we all need to be embarrassed maybe, but he said, no, I can.
Yeah. See, it's easy to see why he would heal a blind person or a deaf person or a leper. But here he performs something to keep from people being humiliated. And wow, do we see this in his ministry. Wait till we come to the woman in adultery where he's riding. when, and all through this, he never, never embarrassed or humiliated. Even Judas, he did not humiliate. Peter, he did not humiliate. And here he begins. What was it? No, it wasn't blind, wasn't lepers. It was people that were caught in a very embarrassing situation. So here we see Jesus socially being among the people. By the way, remember what the Pharisees had accused him of? What did they accuse him all through the 3 years of his ministry? He eats and drinks and socializes with sinners. The second thing is, he starts out a very humble place, a home. Cana could not have been a big city, was not a big city, it was smaller than Nazareth, right next to Nazareth. So we assume when Nathanael said, could anything good come out of Nazareth, this doesn't say a whole lot about Cana, but yet that's where he starts. And the third one was, he keeps people from being humiliated. Now, what's the overall reason he did this miracle? Read the next verse.
And after this, he went down to Capernaum.
Nope. Move back up.
The beginning of his signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee and manifested his glory, and his disciples believed in him.
Okay, read your version. What is that, verse 11?
Yes.
Read verse 11 in the New International.
This, the first of his miraculous signs, Jesus performed at Cana in Galilee. He thus revealed his glory, and his disciples put their faith in him.
Okay, now read the clear word, which likes to expound on it.
This was the beginning of Jesus' life of miracles, which started in Cana of Galilee. What those five disciples saw convinced them that Jesus was the Messiah, and they put their faith in him.
Okay. So how would you sum up why this miracle occurred?
To strengthen the new disciples. They were just starting out.
It was Christ's invitation. He says, come and see. And they saw. Mm-hmm. They experienced.
Here was an opportunity not to embarrass his mother, not to embarrass the bridegroom, the family, and to strengthen the disciples. What does that say about God and who He is and the way He does?
He's doing the same thing with us today.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He comes to us where we are.
Absolutely.
He talks to us in a language we can understand. He leads
right.
us no faster than we're willing to follow.
That's exactly right. Meets us where we're at. Never says, I'm going to put you to a test. He gives us the results first and the foundation. And then if we go through trials, He's already given us the answer that we can draw on. We sometimes forget that.
All the times.
Yeah. So, and so here, the disciples, the next 3 years, they still don't have a clue. But here he had five of them, and he wanted to say to them, you've come, you've followed. Remember when they followed, they didn't have a whole lot of questions. He didn't have a whole lot of answers. But they see him not just perform a miracle. They see him humbly meet people where they're at, take care of what would seem to be very inconspicuous. Man, I almost got it out. And fulfill a need and yet perform a miracle. And he hopes that they see this is the beginning of what the Messiah is like. It fortifies their faith, but again, they keep the wrong picture because they see, man, this is a guy that can deliver us from the Romans. This is a guy who will become king, and we're right here. But notice Jesus does not rebuke him, does not turn away from him. He just continues to give them, over the next 3.5 years, can't you see who I am? The sad thing is, they never did until after the resurrection. But how long do we go through a relationship with Jesus and He sits there and says, you know, you're no different than my disciples. You still haven't caught the picture. But He does not stop. That's who He is. That's why John, after 70 years after this, he's the only one that puts this story of the four Gospels. This is who Jesus is. Father in heaven, we're so thankful for the Gospels, and as we look at the life of Christ, it's easy to say that is God, but as we look at the disciples and the mother who meant well but was so proud of her son that she thought she could kind of help him along, you know, Father, we sometimes do the same thing. We want to help you along in solving our problems. Sometimes we tend to run ahead, but you're the patient one, you're the caring one, and you've always, even though we think we're ahead, you've been there before and prepared the way for us. That's why we love you. That's why we care for you. We ask for a good night's rest, a decent Sabbath school lesson tomorrow, and we pray that you'll think of all of our requests and keep those in mind and answer them. This is our prayer in the name of Jesus. Amen.